Draupadi, the wife of the Pandavas, the wife of the five Pandavas, was an excellent cook. And so she had served on behalf of the Pandavas some very great personalities. So I think it is Suryadev, the sun god, who gave her a magic pot. I think it is Suryadev. My details, I can't remember. So he gave her a magic pot and he said that this pot can produce unlimited food every day. Unlimited. You take one pot and you can serve whole Rath Yatra, Janmashtami, every day, you know, thousands of people. Instead of asking them, why are you down here, take the barfi and go home, right? So, but there was a condition that the pot will stop producing as soon as Draupadi ate her meal. Because she is the hostess. As long as she hasn't eaten, it can feed unlimited people. Once she has eaten, it will stop for that day. So when the Pandavas were in the forest, they had a lot of guests. Even in the forest, they didn't have a home, but they had a lot of guests, and they would feed. And forget about guests, even in the household, to feed the household was not no ordinary matter, because they had Bhima in the family. You know about Bhima? Bhima is their five brothers, you know the five? Yudhishthir, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula and Sahadev. So among these five, Bhima had the most voracious appetite. He had the strength of 10,000 elephants, and he could eat equal to about 1,000 people or 10,000 people every meal, and he would feel hungry very quickly. So imagine in the forest how you can get so much food. So they would travel from village to village or collect food, and Kunti Devi and all, they would collect a heap. If any one of us has to eat, you know, we get 4 or 5 chapatis, we're good enough for that meal. But they would collect a heap like this. And Kunti, the mother, would portion half of it and give it to Bhima. And from the other half, all the other 6 ate it. The 4 other brothers and the 2 ladies. And Bhima would eat his half and say, "What is this, fasting time or what? I want something more to eat." So he was so hungry. So this pot produced unlimited food. So there is this great sage, Durvas Muni. You heard of Durvas Muni recently? In the beginning of a few chapters ago, where he gave this garland to Indra. That's why, okay, let's rewind. You know why Lord Brahma is offering these prayers to the Supreme Lord? Because all the demigods have come crying to him that they have lost the battle with the demons. And the reason they've lost the battle with the demons is because their king Indra has disrespected a great Brahmin called Durvasa. Durvas gave him the deity garland from Vaikuntha. And Indra was sitting on an elephant, arrogant, and said, "Let my elephant take the garland, put it around the elephant." The dull elephant put it on the floor, trampled on it, and walked away. The deity garland. So Durvas Muni became very upset and said, "You rascal, what kind of treatment of Mahaprasad is this?" So by that curse or that misbehavior, Indra lost all his power. And so the demons attacked and took over his kingdom. So they all went, cried to Lord Brahma, who is now praying to Lord Vishnu. So Durvas Muni is a very special Brahmin. He can be very pleased and he can be very angry like that. You never know which side of the bed he gets out of. You know. So Durvas Muni, he was visiting Duryodhan in Hastinapur. And what Duryodhan did is received Durvas Muni very nicely, offered him very nice food, and he and his 60,000 disciples, they're all traveling together. And after lunch, when they were sitting together, Duryodhan was glorifying Draupadi's cooking skills. Like we say, Manoj makes awesome cookies. He was glorifying Draupadi's cooking skills. And so Durvas Muni said, "Oh, she's such a wonderful cook." And Duryodhan said, "Yes, yes. In fact, they're in the forest. You should go meet them. And I'm sure she will offer you very nice food. My only request is you go at such and such time." because he knew it's the time that where Draupadi would have already eaten. They would not be able to produce food for 60,001 people, and that Durvasmani will curse them. That was the whole plot. So like planned, suddenly one day there was a knock on the door. Yudhishthir Maharaj opens the door and there's Durvasmani with 60,000 followers saying, "We're very hungry. Can you feed us?" And Yudhishthir Maharaj said, "Of course. Why not? Please take your bath in the river and come back. We'll have lunch ready for you." As soon as they turned, Yudhishthir was like, "Ah, how do I feed these people?" He was so nervous because Durvasamuni, right? So he ran into the kitchen and told Draupadi, 60,000 plus one, cook lunch please. She said, "Oh no, even the magic pot cannot produce any more food because I've eaten from it now. So there's no way. What to do?" So what would a devotee do? What would a devotee do? Appeal to the Lord for help. So she said, "Krishna, what do I do?" Just because for Draupadi it's such a habit to call out to Krishna. She said, "Krishna, what can I do?" And the next thing she hears is a knock on the door. She opens the door. There's Krishna standing at her door. Now they are in the forest somewhere in the middle of India. Krishna is in Dwaraka, which is the western tip of India. And so Krishna, it's described, was not properly dressed and he was panting because he had run. As soon as Draupadi said, "Krishna," he ran to help her. He says, "Krishna, you're here. What can I do for you?" "Draupadi, I'm very hungry." Draupadi said, "My gosh, I can bear the curse of Durvasmuni, but not feeding you? That's even worse. Why are you making it so difficult for me? I'm struggling because I can't produce any food and now you want to also eat." So Krishna said, "I heard you have this magic pot. Bring it. I'd like to eat from it. And I heard that it can produce unlimited food." Said, "Oh Krishna, it won't die because I've already eaten from it. Bring it nevertheless." So they brought the empty pot, nothing in it. Krishna searched through it and he found one grain of rice in it. He said, "Oh, there is something." He ate that one grain and he said, "I'm very satisfied." And because Krishna is the super soul and the digestive fire of all living entities, it is said that all of creation, including Durvasamuni and his 60,000 disciples, felt completely satisfied while they were bathing in the river, like they had eaten to their heart's content. So they didn't want to eat anymore. So when Yudhishthir Maharaj sent Nakula, "Please go invite them, tell them lunch is ready." They didn't know what was ready. I said, "Lunch is ready." Krishna told them, "Go tell them to come." So they were all figuring out, how is Krishna is telling us, "Go invite the guests. There is nothing to eat." And Krishna said, "Tell them, lunch is ready." So Nakula went, "Oh Durvasmani, please come, lunch is ready." And Durvas said, "No, thank you. We're all very satisfied. We're not hungry anymore. We'll give you all the blessings." And they went away. This is how Krishna can help. Google cannot help. Okay. Fourth one, Google is potentially immortal. Potentially. Why is Google immortal? But why is Google immortal? Because not a physical person that you... Nainam chindanti shastran. You heard Bhagavad Gita? You cannot be cut by any weapon. Nainam dahati pavaka. You cannot burn Google. You cannot moisten it with water. You cannot wither it by the wind. So it's Google in that sense is not material. It's not a person. So they say Google is immortal. But what is our refutation of it? One is, if all humanity stopped using Google, it would die. Okay, that's a good one. What else? Or when Shiva annihilates the universe, she'll be gone too. Okay. Okay. What else? Yeah. Google was born recently in the Bay Area. Krishna was born in Mathura. So someone will refute, Krishna was also born. But we say, Anadir, Krishna has no origin. Google has an origin. Okay, next one. Google is infinite. No? Why not? I'll have to ask you what you were searching for. Okay, Google is infinite. Do you agree? What do you say, Manoj? No. No. Why is Google finite? Infinite is the universe. Confined to the universe. What else? Even if there are many, many, many web pages that Google has archived, still that many has a number. So it is finite in that sense. Okay. Google remembers all. That's item number 6. Is it true? Isn't Google remember everything? As soon as you start typing, it says, hey, you're back. Here's what you search. Someone said Google is like a wife, because as soon as you're typing, she finishes the sentences for you. She completes the sentence for you. But is it true that Google knows, remembers all? Unless you erase the history. But what Google has done is it has cached every web page that is in existence. Every web page is cached. So as soon as you type, it can retrieve it. So, does it remember all? Does Google remember that living entity who is now in a pig body or a cockroach body as to what they were doing previous life? No. So Google does not remember all. Google remembers a lot, but not all. Okay, next one. 7. Google can do no evil. So it is omnibenevolent. Can Google do any evil? If you type in, how do I make a bomb? Will Google say, I don't think it's a good idea? But then Hiranyakashipu, or even the great demons who wanted to destroy, the saintly persons, even they had somehow found out how to make bombs and use them inappropriately. So how would you challenge it? That Google can do no evil. So there are some refutations against... Sorry? You have to speak up loudly.
IP addresses and whatnot.
So it can do evil or cannot do?
I don't believe that it can do evil because of the fact that it's monitored. So if somebody's looking up a bomb, a Google Chrome hacker can get on their webcam and actually see the person's face who's looking up.
Okay, if I put up a
makeup of a woman, so then they can go to their local authorities, Interpol or whatever, can go to local authorities and then...
Okay.
I remember the case of the one guy, he had like 50 gallons of cyanide and a whole bunch of other things, and they waited. They let him gather everything, and then they arrested him.
All right. Come back, Marcel. There's a refutation against God also. Prabhupada would sometimes joke that a merchant, when he would be closing his shop at night, he would pray, my dear Krishna or God, please don't let anyone hack into my store. and rob anything. And parallelly, somewhere else, a thief is praying, "Oh, my dear God, please let some store be, you know, not so secure that I can break into and steal and feed my family." He says that's why God's always in dilemma, because two people are always offering opposite prayers. And Krishna says, "Ye yatha mam prapadyante," whoever approaches me in whatever mood, I reciprocate. If Jordan felt like slapping me, it wouldn't be evil, it's actually a good thing, but then no one's going to stop him. Krishna can sanction it. In fact, more people would support it, but anyway. So Krishna, someone can say, "God made me do it. What's our refutation?" A lot of people will do something and say, "I did it in the name of God, because God asked me to do, and it's maybe evil, or no one stopped me." What would our refutation be? Someone murdered someone, said, "Krishna made me do it." What would you say, Mitch? What?
Could that person prove that? How did Krishna tell them?
I don't know. Said, "Krishna told me, came in my dream and told me to commit this crime or do this bad thing or whatever." Scripture says one who is not a Vaishnava, you can cut their tongue or jump into, you know, let's say suppose it says, or whatever, if you don't such and such, you can come, you kill the infidel. What do you say? Yes, Mataji. Because there is something called free will. It's very important for us to understand that. First of all, in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 5, Krishna says, all the nonsense that happens in the material world, I'm not responsible for it. And second, there is something called free will. And it's always easy to blame it on God, but we are responsible because we have exercised our free will. And someone will say, "Well, there's no free will. I was forced by Krishna to stab that fellow." Say, all right, because you heard Krishna, then you have to take the punishment. Right? Because there is free will. There is volition from our side as well. Because we always have the choice to not do so. We have the intelligence to understand when not to do it. Yes, their answer that Google cannot do any evil, the point that they're making is Google is always neutral. Whatever you ask, that's what you get. But Google's neutrality, is it universally applicable? In one sense, yes, because Google is an inanimate object. Google's not conscious. This phone is neutral to anyone and everyone. Whether it is a very learned person or a thief on the road or man or woman or happy or sad, this phone doesn't distinguish. So it's neutral. But that doesn't make this God, because it is neutral. So the point only is about neutrality here. So the program in the bias is the bias of the programmer, not the phone. Because it's still not conscious. In our case, the difference is we are conscious. So we have choice. Krishna is also conscious. He is a person. So he knows. Yet he maintains his neutrality while he can make choices. That's the greatness of Krishna. One of the greatnesses of Krishna. Phone is inanimate object. This table is inanimate. It is neutral to everyone. Whoever comes to place a book or anything on it, it won't object to it, because it's not conscious. Google's not conscious. Okay, next one. 8th one. Google, the word Google, is searched for more than the terms God, Jesus, Allah, Buddha, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, and Judaism combined. The word Google is searched for more than these terms all combined together. Shows where humanity is, right? Okay. Yeah, it is the church of Google who have their nine purposes or nine statements. So how would we refute it? Yeah, it's not. Also, if I want to call out to Krishna, it's not like my morning japa is on Google, right? I don't have to search Google, but I have to search directions for it. Oh, sorry, yeah, unfortunately. Okay, 9. Evidence of Google's existence is abundant, which means that existence of God is not abundant. That's the point they're making. So existence of Google, evidence of Google's existence is available in abundance. Is evidence of God's existence available in abundance? Is that an Indian nod, Marcel? Because I don't know if it's a yes or a no. Yes, no. Mitch, what do you think? Is there abundant evidence on the existence of God? You look like a serious sage.
Yeah.
Yes.
Abundant. Is there abundant evidence for evidence of God?
Then why do many people? Why the purport is what Prabhupada is saying. Atheists and demons cannot understand the supreme personality of Godhead, although He is situated within everyone. What is the problem? There is abundance of evidence, according to you. What's the problem? Why can't people see it?
They can't accept.
They cannot accept.
Yes.
What is the difficulty in accepting it?
Seems like they want to manufacture their own God. They want to create it. They can't accept what is already there.
What is the problem? Why can't they accept what's already there? What you can see, apparently so easily, why can't I see? Or anyone else? You had your hand raised, Manoj? They're not seeking. That's a good point. They're not seeking. Even if they were seeking and they can't see, touch, smell, taste, what's the problem? What does the purport say is the main issue? In fact, what is Lord Brahma saying? Our bodies and our subtle bodies are made of goodness, and we are not able to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What to speak of others? Gatim na sukshmam rishayascha vidmahe kuto asuradya itaraf pradana. What to speak of others who are influenced by passion and ignorance? This is the reason that abundant evidence cannot be accepted, because consciousness is influenced by passion and ignorance. Passion means there is a layer of dust on the mirror. When there is a layer of dust on the mirror, you cannot see the true image or reflection. True? Correct. Cannot. Second, in the absence of light, darkness. Ignorance is like darkness. In a dark room, we can't see our own hand. We know it exists because somewhere it's connected, hopefully. We can't see it. We can't see it. We can't see our own hand unless there is light. So as long as our consciousness, that's the purport, as long as the consciousness is in darkness or contaminated by dust. And this dust is basically lust. That's the point. Lust, greed, envy, pride, all these things, they form a filter, a screen in front of our vision, or in front of our senses. So these senses cannot perceive something that is pure on the other side of ignorance and passion and goodness. And so, in a dark room, if you were to tell someone, go to such and such room and look for whatever pen on the desk, and there's no light in the room, then the person will say, where is the pen? They'll say, it's on the table. I can't see it. It's right there. I can't see it. Where's the table? Have you entered the room? Yes. Walk straight. Okay, I walk straight. Turn right. But they won't know after some point where to go. Until you turn the light on. How much light do you need? Do you need like a 10,000 watt bulb in the room? No. Even a candlelight, even a matchstick is sufficient to at least get a sense of how things are, correct? So similarly, even a little bit of transcendence is sufficient to give us a good enough understanding of existence of Krishna. And that little matchstick can be the presence of a devotee. Prabhupada's books, little Mahaprasad, they're all means by which that little light is turned on. These are the transformative media by which consciousness improves to go beyond ignorance and passion. That's why we need the disciplic succession, Prabhupada's books, chanting of the holy name, Mahaprasadam, etc., etc., as means of bringing us out of ignorance and passion. As long as that's not there, it doesn't matter how much information is downloaded on a person, that light's not turned on. Therefore we recite this verse, Om Ajnana Timirandhasya. Ajnana means the ignorance. Ignorance. Timirandhasya. I was in the deepest, darkest regions of darkness. And Jnananjana. By Jnananjana is the eyes of knowledge. My eyes have been opened by the torchlight of knowledge. So the spiritual master, he brings this torchlight of the Vedas, knowledge about God, scriptures that are so effulgent and bright. The spiritual master is to bring into this darkness so we can see. Oh, Chakshur Unmilita. He has opened my eyes from the deepest darkness, ignorance. And therefore I offer my obeisances unto him. This is such a grand service that the spiritual masters do on behalf of Krishna to bring us out of this darkness. Otherwise, Lord Brahma is saying, even we who are so situated in goodness, where everything is so clear, it's illumined. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the mode of goodness illuminates the person with knowledge and detachment and happiness. Sattva guna is one that illuminates a person with happiness and knowledge. Even they cannot understand Krishna. What to speak of people who are in darkness? To understand, Prabhupada writes, to understand this, the demigods are praying to Krishna. How is it, Krishna, that you can make yourself accessible to all these souls who are deep in darkness? And the medium is the spiritual masters, the line of spiritual masters who bring the torchlight of scripture into the lives, the dark lives of people. Awesome, huh? What service Prabhupada and Prabhupada's predecessors and followers are doing for us. That's the problem. Any comments, questions? Can we offer our prayers to Google? No. Anything? Jordan, you have something? Can you give him the mic?
I just have a question directly relating to the verse, the last words, pradana, although they are leaders of their own societies, but in the translation, Prabhupada doesn't put that in there, that. So I'm wondering how we can understand when we look at the word for word, this happens for, every once in a while, where there's a difference in the word for word than Prabhupada's translation.
Prabhupada is helping us capture two things. One is the meaning, and second is the entire spirit of the conversation. So has it ever been, have you heard a foreign language that you know? Two people speaking a foreign language that you understand a little bit or something from it? Happens. You may pick some words, and some words have some meanings to it. But the way two persons are speaking, if you just go, if you remove the persons from the picture and just take the words, you get one meaning. And if you have the two persons in picture, you get a whole different meaning from it. For example, I can't think of it right now, but let's say some words. Let's say, I'll meet you at such and such place. Okay? I'll give you an actual Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's example as well. But let's say, I'll meet you in such and such place. If you were to just take that set of words, I'll meet you at such and such place. But there, yeah, you know the meaning, I'll meet at such and such place. But let's say, two people who are deeply or madly in love with each other say that I'll meet you at such and such place. That place, the meeting time, and all of that has a whole different connotation to it. Correct? We as the audience don't know these two persons, so we may not appreciate what those words mean. But someone who's intimately connected can give lot of meanings to, wow, that's what it really means. They're meeting after this, they're meeting at such and such place that reminds them, who knows what. So you see, those set of words now have a different meaning and context to it. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, there are two situations to help illustrate this. One is, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, before he took sannyas, he was sitting by the banks of the Ganges River and saying, repeating the word gopi, gopi, like that. Remembering the damsels of Vrindavan. So someone came and told him, his little student, little guy, why are you chanting the words of gopi? You should actually be chanting the names of Krishna. And corrected him. Which, scripturally speaking, is correct statement. We should chant Krishna's name. But because we are followers of Prabhupada and Rupa Goswami, we have an appreciation for why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying what he was saying. Correct? Which otherwise we wouldn't understand. You go forward in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One day, Lord Chaitanya took a bath, I think in the Ganges or somewhere, walked out, and he was reciting like two lines of a verse that are very, seemingly very mundane. It was about a boy, actually about a girl, who went to the place where she and her boyfriend would meet often. But he was not there, so she was saying something. It's no fun. You know, like, suppose a boy and girl go to a certain movie together, and it was their favorite movie or song, and then they're not together and they hear the same song. It's not the same fun anyway, because you were not there. So this girl is saying something like that, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is repeating these two lines, that I was sitting under the tree by the banks of the river, the breeze was blowing, but it was no fun because you were not there. A very mundane set of words. And everyone's like, what's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying? They couldn't fathom it. But he was only saying the first two lines, whatever. Because a verse is four lines, right? So it has 32 syllables, at least. So Rupa Goswami, who heard it, sat down and wrote the other two lines on a palm leaf. And everyone saw it and they were shocked. Like, how did Rupa Goswami know what was going on in Lord Chaitanya's mind? Because the words he was using was so mundane, seemingly mundane. And so they took that verse to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He saw it and stuck it on the roof of his hut and walked in. And Swarup Damodar Goswami said, Rupa Goswami has understood your heart. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, yes, he has, because he has received my full mercy. The other two lines are describing that this is what Srimati Radharani is saying when she visits Vrindavan, or when she is moving through Vrindavan and Krishna is not there anymore. So the same Kadamba tree, the same cool breezes of Vrindavan, the full moon night, the Yamuna has no meaning, doesn't have the same charm as it did when you were with me. So you have to know the meaning behind. So sometimes literally some words are there and Prabhupada gives us both the meaning and the spirit of things behind. Because Prabhupada has access to something that we don't have beyond the transliteration. Does that help in any way? So in this case, yeah, he didn't say that these are the great leaders of the atheistic kind. Pradhana means that the leaders are big, big guys. But it's included in it that they are influenced by passion and ignorance. So even if they are so-called atheists, and says, who are insignificant in their bodily constitution because of passion and ignorance, how can they understand Krishna? I don't know if I over-answered your question, but it's not just the literal meaning, but another way is to say it is, just because we know English, is it easy to understand a book on physics? It's an English language. We can read it. It has certain words. We know the words. But we don't understand the laws of physics just because we know English. Someone who knows physics has to help us. It's in that spirit. Okay. Looks like we've ended. Thank you. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
I'd like to ask about the confidence, the two things.
Confidence.
You said something about confidence.
I didn't say anything about confidence. Did I?
Yeah.
But what's the question? Ask it anyway.
You made a really interesting point about confidence.
Ask it anyway. Let's see.
I'm asking what you were saying about confidence.
I didn't say confidence. I said Prabhupada, as our acharya, as our teacher, he has access to the heart of...
This was maybe 15 minutes.
Confidence. Because it was 15 minutes ago, I'm neither Google nor God. I can't remember everything. Sorry. So there is this verse, Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale. We recite this every day, right? Oh my dear Rupa Goswami, when will I receive your mercy from you who has understood the heart of Lord Chaitanya. So that access is necessary as well. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.